If you think you can't go from politics to the divine, Carol Gold and Steve Clark are about to take you above the fray. The only agenda here is to empower you to think for yourself, ask more questions, and trust your own truth. So now, the combination talk radio has been missing. Until now, Carol Gold and Steve Clark taking you above the fray.
Hi, welcome. I'm Carol Gold. The number here is 914-803-4522 if you'd like to get in on the discussion. I want to talk tonight about what happened in Garland, Texas over the weekend. And the reason that I want to talk about it is because I live in Texas, and it's personal, meaning it's very close to home for me. But more importantly, I think there are many messages, many lessons and messages to come out of the Garland, Texas experience, where Pamela Geller and others held a $10,000 first prize contest for cartoons about the Prophet Muhammad. And of course, as everyone listening to the show now knows, that two allegedly ISIS-leaning homegrown domestic terrorists attempted to embark upon and succeed with a terror attack at that event. However, there was an obvious anticipation that there would be a problem at that event, given what has happened around the world in relationship to writing about or speaking about outside of Islam, or certainly drawing, as we saw in France with Charlie Hebdo, images or writings about the Prophet Muhammad that are not sanctioned by what now appears to be a ruling class within the Muslim religion, which are Islamists, which are those people who want to rule the world globally by Sharia law. And so when the two terrorists attempted to do their damage with explosives in Garland at the event, what happened was they both wound up dead. Interestingly enough, not because the SWAT teams were there, because Garland was very ready for this. You know, I live in Texas for a multitude of reasons, but one of the reasons I moved here 2 years ago is because I honestly believe that this is one of the last places where the Constitution means something. And we even have our shortcomings here in Texas. But as a whole, people here respect the principles and the values upon which this country was founded. Again, not perfect. Granted, we still had slavery, but we had come a far way from what the cultures and the societies of Europe were like. And those founding principles, both in the Declaration of Independence and in the Constitution, are clearly enlightened, forward-thinking, brilliant principles upon which this country was founded. And I think Texas still honors that, and I'm not sure how many places left in this country still do. And so the point I'm making, at least the first point I'd like to make about what happened in Garland, is that despite the heavy armored presence of both SWAT teams and regular terror-trained response teams, it was actually an off-duty traffic cop who shot and killed the two terrorists. So I think there are several lessons here. The first is that understanding that Islamists mean what they say, and that they are about terror, and they are about cowering the West, and they are not beyond the most terror based activities, that when you acknowledge them for who they are, who they say they are, and for what they say they will do, and if you anticipate their presence or their arrival and you prepare accordingly, you have the outcome that we had in Garland, which, as I wrote in many commentaries on the web, the only two people dead in Garland are the two people who should be dead, the two terrorists. It's also a reason why I think gun-free zones are very dangerous places. Had the event been given at a place that was a gun-free zone, such as are our schools, there would have been a tremendous amount of damage. And even though ISIS, who now claims at least tacit responsibility, because these were ISIS sympathizers, if not totally ISIS-trained, ISIS now says that we here in the United States are delusional to think that we did anything they didn't expect us to do, and that they gave up their lives willingly. They weren't shot by accident, or they weren't shot in an unanticipated exchange, because they willingly gave up their lives, allegedly, according to ISIS, because, quote, we were watching, meaning ISIS was watching them as martyrs, and that they went in there to die. I find it hard to believe. I find it like Monday morning quarterbacking, for the simple reason that they were wearing bulletproof vests. I don't think if you're heading in to deliberately give up your life as a martyr because you want to show your dedication to the movement, I don't think you wear a bulletproof vest. The bulletproof vest indicates that you hope to survive that event. So that's the first, or that's, I guess that's the second point. The first point being regarding the officer, the off-duty traffic cop who took them down with his revolver or with whatever arm he had. He probably had a 9mm. I don't know what he had on him, but I'm guessing it was a 9mm. We in this country have reached a critical mass point in relationship to our local police officers. There is a great deal of growing hatred and mistrust for the police. And I think while some of it is, and we talked about this a little bit on the last show when Steve was here with me, I think that some of it is rightfully earned, to the extent that there are bad cops. There, you know, I'm out looking to buy a new car. There are bad car salesmen. There are bad politicians. There are bad doctors, lawyers, plumbers. There are bad people. There are people who are behaving within their profession or their occupation well below the standard that their occupation or profession requires of them. And so police officers are not an exception. And it's particularly egregious when a cop acts improperly, just like it's particularly egregious to me as an attorney when an attorney violates a canon of ethics. I believe that if you're going to be an attorney, you should look at it like a calling, not a business, and hold yourself to the code of ethics that your profession requires of you. And so when there's a bad cop, as we call them, it's particularly bad because they're in the business of law enforcement. They're not in the business of taking graft. They're not in the business of shooting people irresponsibly. They're not in the business of arresting people without cause. It happens. But for the most part, I don't think that's unilaterally true of our police across this country. And if, in fact, our police throughout the country have moved in a direction that is not where we want them to go, I don't blame them as much as I blame the politicians who have driven them there and the culture that has driven them there. I think that we have misplaced our frustration and even our anger at the corruption in politics, at the short failings of government, of the manipulation by politicians and people who are politically and financially well-connected to abuse the capitalist system, to abuse the free market, to manipulate the public through media, including journalism, including Hollywood. I think that the people who run the culture, who drive the culture, who we've abdicated responsibility to by allowing them to tell us what we like and what we think and what we should wear and how we should live and what kind of cars we should drive, I think that we have allowed them to move us in a direction where the people who really deserve blame, who deserve to be forced to take responsibility, and I don't mean force through physical force, but through the force of the rule of law, who should be forced to take responsibility for what they've done to this nation and to this culture, instead, we take it out in other places where it's easier and where we can vent our anger and not do the heavy lifting. Meaning, it's too easy to blame the police. It's just too easy. They're doing a job that they're told they need to do. They're doing a job that the federal government is imposing upon them now, which is we're militarizing our local police forces. They are arming themselves with military-style, military-grade equipment and munitions, And I think that's point number three that I want to make, not only about Garland and about Texas in general and all 50 states, but also about the mounting, what will we call this, the mounting dissension that we're seeing in race riots across the country, and that even Israel saw last weekend with black Ethiopian Jews rioting in Tel Aviv, something that's never before happened in the history of Israel. And what I would say about that, you can't make any noise, I'm on air. I think we just went off air briefly. Let me go back. You lost me for about a minute. Let me just pick up where I left off. I think that what we're seeing, what we've been seeing in riots across the country, race riots, what we saw in Baltimore, what we saw in Ferguson, both of which were instigated not on fact, but on fiction, it turns out. I think what we saw in New York with the shooting and the killing of that officer at point blank range, the riots in Seattle, and most recently also in Israel, the black Ethiopian Jews that rioted regarding racism in Israel last weekend, something Israel has never seen in the history of the country. I think that we have to be aware that there is a movement both domestically and foreign, and I don't think the movement has a single source. I think there are multiple political agendas around the world that have violence and polarization and pitting one group against the other as their means to a variety of ends. So by that I mean I think that ISIS has a goal of Sharia worldwide rule. It's reestablishing the caliphate. I think that domestically, there's communists, there are white supremacists, there are ultra-liberal political groups that thrive off of chaos, that thrive off of dissension. And I think that they are picking on a particularly vulnerable class of society and group of society, which is African Americans. It should be noted that during the Obama presidency, which should have been probably a landmark unifying presidency in the history of the United States, given that he's black, under the Obama administration, African Americans have suffered more economically than any other group of people. Teens particularly, African American teens in terms of unemployment, housing. Black Americans own less housing and are purchasing less housing now than they did at the beginning of the Obama administration. There are less jobs for blacks. There are less jobs for black teens. There's less opportunity for advancement and frustration at the level of black teens who see no way out of their present situation. And I think that there are people who want to seize that reality and use it to incite, use it to change the United States in a way that is extremely un-American, that is extremely harmful to the country. And I think that when you look around the world and you see that there are various organizations, neo-Nazis, particularly in Europe, tremendous amount of polarization, political parties. I think just today, if I'm not mistaken, in Britain, Cameron retained the vote and he will be the new prime minister or he will hold his seat. But the second place winner in that election was the UKIP party, and the UKIP party is a fascist party. It's a fascist organization. ISIS is spreading. It is leaving the Middle East. It is moving into Europe. It is moving here into the United States. They have said this week that they have 71 of their soldiers ready in 13 states or 11 states to create terror upon their order, upon the order of ISIS. And I don't doubt that they're here. My concern is that those of us in this country who are not part of these extremist groups, those of us who constitute the majority of citizens in this country, are allowing ourselves to be blinded and deafened and misdirected away from what we really need to pay attention to. And that is similar to Germany in 1938 and 1939, when Hitler was on the rise, people didn't believe it could happen. And they didn't believe he was going to do what he ultimately said he would do. Just like people are making believe that ISIS isn't as dangerous as it is, that there isn't a Christian Holocaust occurring in the Middle East. There is, because that is ISIS's mission, to destroy Christians in the Middle East and ultimately to destroy Christianity worldwide. You know, recently a Jewish rabbi went to speak to a well-known talk show host on talk radio, and he said to the talk show host, who is often doing stories on Israel and on bigotry against Jews and anti-Semitism, he said, you know, the rabbi said to this Christian, you know, I wish you'd stop talking about the oppression of the Jews and talk about what's being done to the Christians in the Middle East. Because there is, that is happening. And so what did we do? What did the media do with what happened in Garland, where I started the show tonight? In Garland, Pamela Geller had what many people find offensive. In a way, I found it offensive. Pamela Geller held, along with others, this draw a cartoon about Mohammed contest with a $10,000 first prize. Some argue it's hate speech. It's a manifestation of hate speech. And maybe it is. But the Constitution protects hate speech. The Constitution doesn't have exemptions for different kinds of speech. Free speech is free speech, and the speech you most want to protect always is the speech that most offends you. Because if the speech that most offends you has freedom of expression, then nothing will be prevented, and no one will be prevented from freedom of expression. There's a difference between almost assaulting someone, walking up to someone and in their face, calling them filthy names and trying to basically do everything but touch them, everything but create a literal physical assault. There's a difference between that and drawing cartoons of someone that you are mocking or making fun of. Jews have had cartoons drawn about them forever. There's a play on Broadway that won Tony Awards called The Book of Mormon. It is slanderous to Mormon people. But you don't see Mormons with AK-47s on Broadway shooting down people connected to the theater. Because in the civilized world, and particularly in the West, and particularly in countries that honor free speech, that have laws that protect free speech, and we are, of course, one of few in the world, you don't respond to being insulted with killing. That's not what civilized people do, but that is what ISIS and Islamists do. And because we are making believe that we don't have to stand up for them, to them, because we have a president who won't, and an administration who won't call them by their name, who won't call evil what it is by its name, they are infiltrating this country. And they will do damage on a given day. It is inevitable because I don't know what else to call them except idiots like the mainstream press who've spent the week chastising Pamela Geller for having the event to begin with instead of championing both free speech and the off-duty cop who took down the two terrorists. Something has happened to us. We have been conditioned. We are being, our minds are being brainwashed to believe that ISIS is something like a new political party, a new small political party that we don't need to concern ourselves with. They are global terrorists with a global vision. Adolf Hitler had a global vision. And had he not been stopped, we'd live in a different world than we do today. And he made it very clear how he was going to reach his goal. He was going to destroy. He was going to murder. He was going to burn. He was going to torture anyone who was in his way and didn't fit his description, the same way that if you don't believe in the Quran and you live in a Sharia-ruled country, you either die or pay a tax for having the right not to be a Muslim. That's not the way the world works in a civilized society. And so the media is manipulating or engaging in an argument about whether cartoons are hate speech. The only argument you should be engaging in is, why are we not standing up and readying ourselves for what's coming? Why are our borders porous where these people have been able to get in? We know there are training camps here in this country. There's one outside of Houston. We can't do anything. Why? Because they haven't done anything illegal yet. They're just training. There's a point of absurdity and a point of blindness when the day will come that we have no one to blame but ourselves. And how does it work? It works this way. You marginalize people. You marginalize ideas. You marginalize principles and concepts so that they become not popular. You make them politically incorrect. And before you know it, you have excluded from polite societal conversation the very things that you need to be discussing to maintain the culture and the quality of life that you see for yourself. We have marginalized and made politically incorrect talking about radical Islam. We have marginalized and turned into the enemy groups like the Tea Party, people like Pamela Geller, who only are exercising her constitutional right. I don't have to agree with Pamela Geller, and I don't have to think that drawing cartoons of Muhammad is a good thing. But I do have to stand up for her right and anyone else's who wants to hold that event in a public arena where they've paid for a private facility and where you aren't forced to attend, where you pay an admission, and there's a prize. That's what's great about the United States. You can be Larry Flint and produce the most obscene pornography and degradation of women, and I can be so appalled that I want to scream. Or you can be Pamela Geller, and you can hold an event that draws cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. Or you can be the most left-winged nut liberal or the most right-wing nut conservative, and I stand for each and every one of them. Because if I don't stand for them, then we start to decide who has freedom of speech and who doesn't. And once you go down that road, you go down the road of Nazi Germany. You begin to say certain things are okay and certain things aren't. And by the way, certain people are okay and certain people aren't. Certain groups are okay and certain groups aren't. And we are very close. I want to say to my listeners, we are very close to reaching a point of no return in this country. I hope we don't have to have a multiple terror event to wake us up. I hope there are enough people out there like me who can look back at history, can look at other societies and see where this originates and how this originates and how it grows. I think the people who are most disturbed about what's happening in this country today are immigrants, are people who've come from communist or oppressive societies. And when you hear them, when they call into talk shows or when you meet them socially, they say the same thing. You people in America don't realize what's happening here. I lived in Poland. I lived in Czechoslovakia. I lived in Russia. I lived in Cuba. Wherever it is, the story is always the same. The only way that you stop hate speech is by changing people's hearts, not by changing the laws that limit what they can say. If there's a war that ought to be fought, it's the war to change our hearts one to the other. But in the interim, I don't know how many Gandhis we have at the moment. And staring down ISIS isn't the same as staring down the British Empire, because the British had the same love of life as did Gandhi and other Indians. ISIS has no love of life. They have a love of death. And that's what we have to realize we are up against. As they say themselves, they love death more than we love life. That's a reality. that we have to face. And I hope that you begin to think for yourself and not allow the media to distract you on a week when there was something to applaud and honor, which was a cop in Garland, Texas, who took out two terrorists, and a woman who had the courage of her convictions, whether you believe in her or not. And as I close the show, there's something that's probably the most important thing I can say on the show today, and that is, there is a U.S. Marine who has been held in Iran for the last 3.5 years, know nothing about, that the media has done nothing to promote, that the government has done nothing to secure his release. If you go to hashtag Free Amir, A-M-I-R now, he is a Muslim. He is an American Muslim. He is an American Muslim Marine. He has been tortured. He has been forced to be addicted to drugs, and then they withdraw him suddenly to put him through violent withdrawal. They have kept him in a 3x3-foot box when he's been withdrawing from drugs. They told him his mother was dead when he was withdrawing from drugs. Our illustrious president and our former illustrious State Department, head of the State Department, Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, they did nothing to get him out. He is still there. Why is he still there? We don't leave our boys behind. Hillary Clinton was on the watch when this happened. Why do we have a U.S. Marine in Iran when we are sitting at a negotiating table, negotiating with people whose sole purpose is to annihilate us in the end, to annihilate the West, to annihilate Israel? Why are we at a negotiating table with people who are torturing and holding an American Marine, serving his country with honor and dignity, who came home from his service in Iraq, by the way, and only went back to Iran because he's an Iranian by descent and heard that his grandmother was sick. And when he went back, the Iranians grabbed him. Shame on this administration. Shame on this president. Shame on our State Department. Shame on Hillary Clinton. Hashtag Free Amir Now. Hashtag Free Amir Now. And by the way, there is House Resolution 223. Call your congressman and make sure he or she is voting for H.R. 223. It will demand that we do everything possible to bring home Americans being held captive in Iran and by foreign nations. Thank you for listening to Above the Fray. I'm Carol Gold. I'll be back here again on, Thursday. I'll be back here again on Monday with my co-host Steve Clark. Until then, have a wonderful weekend. Realize the blessed nation in which you live, realize the rights that you have, cherish them dearly, and do what you can to keep America, America, and keep America free. Thank you, and have a great weekend.
You've been listening to Above the Fray with Carol Gold and Steve Clark, from politics to the divine. Thanks for being a part of a new way to see the world. Visit our website at AboveTheFrayPodcast.com and like us on our Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/AboveTheFrayPodcast. This has been Carol Gold and Steve Clark, taking you always above the fray.